Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is On Air Daily News for Friday, March 17, 2023. And today in the news, Governor J.B. Pritzker is investing in the Community College of Malcolm X. On the final day of his Community College tour, Governor J.B. Pritzker was joined by Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton, state officials, and community leaders at Malcolm X College to highlight proposed investments in higher education. The governor's FY24 budget calls for the largest increase for community colleges in over two decades and historic investments in financial aid, putting Illinois on track to guarantee every student has access to the education and training they need to thrive. Governor J.B. Pritzker said, "Since I took office in 2019, Illinois has increased our MAP grant program by 50%, creating over $200 million more for college scholarships every year." He added, "And when the General Assembly passes the FY24 budget proposal, every working class resident of Illinois will be able to get a degree from any community college in our state, tuition-free and fee-free. That means people across our state can get a good education and graduate with no student loans." Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton said, "There's nothing more powerful than to help someone learn and find their voice. I watched my late mother give her all to teach students at Malcolm X College and saw the joy it inspired in both her and her students. That's why I am especially proud of the historic investments our state is making in community colleges and state universities. We know the struggle that many first-generation and working-class students face, and we are easing their financial burdens to help their dreams come true." And that was a statement from Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton. The proposed FY24 investments in day-to-day operations and state financial aid would make attending a higher education institution easier and more affordable. The governor's proposed budget also calls for a $100 million investment in monetary award program, MAP, grants, making it the highest in state history and a 75% increase in the program since he took office. State Senator Selena Villanueva from Chicago said, "Money and lack of resources should not be reasons why students are missing out on the opportunity to pursue a higher education. It is imperative that we continue fighting to ensure that students in Illinois have a fair chance at succeeding in life with sustainable and affordable college options." And that was from State Senator Selena Villanueva of Chicago. In today's event, Governor Pritzker stood alongside Community College President David Sanders to highlight the above proposed investments. Malcolm X College was founded in 1911, making it the oldest city college in Chicago. Last fall, the institution served 7,312 students, demonstrating an 11.5% increase since the 2021-2022 school year. Notably, year over year, 21-22 versus 22-23, preliminary data shows that city colleges saw an 8% increase in credit enrollment for black students and a 6% increase in credit enrollment for Latino students. City College's enrollment has outperformed state and national averages. Increased enrollment is due in part to a variety of programs the colleges offer, including 1, Future Ready, which offers students the opportunity to receive short-term credentials at no additional cost. 2, Fresh Start, a debt forgiveness program allowing students who left City Colleges with debt to return and continue their studies. And 3, the Chicago Roadmap, an unprecedented partnership with Chicago Public Schools that creates a clear path for CPS students to attend and complete college. Malcolm X College has evolved over the years in response to student needs. Tuition at City Colleges has not increased since 2016, and administration has ensured that every student has a pathway to career or to transfer to a four-year institution. The college has raised more than $20 million in grant funding to execute its equity plan and remove barriers for students, which would alleviate the cost of tuition, uniforms, transportation, food, housing, mental health services, and personal hygiene. These initiatives, alongside the proposed investments by Governor Pritzker's administration, would allow all community college students at or below median income to attend school tuition and fee free. And this is an event today that could change many lives, especially when higher education is often the barrier for changing one's circumstances. So, one of the things that Governor Pritzker and Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton have emphasized is making education available by making it free. And there are many programs across Illinois that are preparing jobs for today's industries that could make a big difference. So we look forward to the changes that will be made, not only in Chicago, but across the state of Illinois, as many students, those who might even be owing money, are able to re-enroll and continue their education. Also today, the Gene Siskel Film Center announces the Chicago Film Society presents Technicolor Weekend, March 17th to Sunday, March 19th. They say, join us all weekend long to celebrate the longevity, beauty, and richness of the Technicolor printing process. Not to be confused with the three-strip Technicolor filming process abandoned in 1955, the Technicolor printing process involved transferring yellow, cyan, and magenta dyes into one by one into the film base to create the release prints and shown in theaters in a process analogous to offset printing. Prints produced using this method were known for their deep, saturated colors, and the resulting look is effectively impossible to replicate using 2023's digital or analog technologies. Technicolor prints also have the archival benefit of extraordinary color stability. While the colors in an original print of Rebel Without a Cause, printed on Eastman stock, the leading Technicolor competitor in the 50s and through 70s, would be completely faded to pink today, Artisan Models, released the same year but printed on Technicolor stock, has color just as rich as the day it was released. Although Technicolor printing ended in the USA around 1974, the process was so beloved that it was very briefly revived from 1996 to 2001 at incredible expense, during which time a handful of large studio titles, including Bulworth, which screens as part of this series, and classics, Apocalypse Now, Redux, Gone with the Wind, Funny Girl, were printed. The process was retired permanently when Technicolor was bought by the British media company Carlton Communications, rendering every surviving Technicolor print completely irreplaceable. Aside from The Wizard of Oz, which screens in a reissue print from the 1950s, all of the films screening in this series are original release prints. They were intended to last only through their initial runs, but instead have endured hundreds of projections, studio mergers, film exchange closures, and multiple private owners. These unlikely survivors offer us a view of what these films looked like before digital color correction and other modern restoration techniques, and are stunning examples of an incredibly complex industrial process that delighted millions. And this statement was made by Julian Antos of the Chicago Film Society. Presented in partnership with the Chicago Film Society, all films are presented on 35 millimeters. And to take a look at the series at a glance, the wonderful, terrifying, beguiling, and marvelous landmark Technicolor film, The Wizard of Oz, kicks off the series. The iconic transition from black and white to color, which occurs at a real change, still makes our hearts skip a beat. Presenting a 1950s Technicolor reissue print from a private collector, Warren Beatty co-produced, co-wrote, directed, and starred in the bizarre and often moving takedown of the American political system, Bullworth, from 1998. Approximately 100 of the 2,000 released prints were made from the revamped IB Technicolor process, which makes full use of cinematographer Vittorio Storaro's expressive color palette. The Technicolor Shorts program highlights some of the things Technicolor prints do best: animation, including Porgy and Daffy, travelogues, and industrial films. CFS, the Chicago Film Society, will present some of their most beautiful Technicolor trailers, give an in-depth overview of the printing process, and show you what Technicolor prints look like once they've been wet. Scripted by Frank Nugent of The Researchers, Gunman's Walk stars Tab Hunter as the drunken gunslinging son of lawless rancher Van Heflin, and James Darren as his polar opposite brother, a dark, brooding pacifist. This 35-millimeter print recently returned to the U.S. after spending several decades with a collector in Canada. Naturally, the first time the CFS shows a James Bond film, they show the most divisive one, On Her Majesty's Secret Service, thought by some to be the best of the series and others to be among the worst. Steven Soderbergh noted, "Shot to shot, this movie is beautiful in a way none of the other Bond films are. An emotionally stunning Technicolor melodrama from the director who basically invented them, Douglas Sirk's 1957 Interlude. At the time, Universal, who released all of Sirk's 1950s films, printed some of their titles on Eastman stock and others on Technicolor. Luckily, this obscure and rarely revived title, beautifully shot on location in Germany and Austria, received the preferred treatment. Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis, Shirley MacLaine, and Dorothy Malone star in perhaps the strongest example of a live-action film with the kinetic energy of a cartoon. Frank Tashlin's 1955 Artists and Models, a masterpiece far ahead of its time." And all titles are presented on 35-millimeter film. And this is from the Chicago Film Society, programmed in partnership with the Chicago Film Society Technicolor Weekend. And also in the news today, we take a look at some of the issues that have erupted as the Chicago mayoral race continues to draw various figures who are making endorsement decisions, and some of those endorsement decisions create a bit of controversy. In the Chicago mayor's race, it seems to be a tight contest between former Chicago Public Schools CEO Paul Vallas, who got the number one vote in the initial election, and second place winner, Cook County Commissioner Brandon Johnson. And one of the issues discussed and the number one concern has been public safety. Chicago mayoral candidates Paul Vallas and Brandon Johnson continue to vie for endorsements from political leaders across the city and the country, with the election just 3 weeks away. And here are some of the names lending their support to the various candidates. Of course, Paul Vallas and Brandon Johnson advanced to the runoff election out of a field of 9 candidates, including incumbent Mayor Lori Lightfoot. And according to the latest data from the Chicago Board of Elections, Paul Vallas received 33% of the first round vote, while Brandon Johnson received 21.57% of the vote. And although more than half of the members of the Chicago City Council issued endorsements in the first round of this year's mayoral election, many are now being courted by the race's two remaining candidates as both aim to consolidate support. Paul Vallas, the first place finisher of the election, entered the runoff with endorsements from downtown City Council members Brandon Riley and Brian Hopkins, while also receiving backing from far northwest side Alderman Anthony Napolitano and longtime Lakeview Alderman Tom Tunney. He also received endorsements from former Illinois Secretary of State Jesse White and former mayoral candidate and 6th Ward Alderman Roderick Sawyer, the former of whom backed Lawyer Lightfoot in the first round. In the days since, of course, both candidates have continued to receive endorsements, and the latest endorsements to Paul Vallas came from former mayoral challenger Jamal Green. And here are a few words from his endorsement announcement today, as well as some of the announcements made on behalf of Brandon Johnson. Brandon Johnson, of course, has also been endorsed by the Chicago Teachers Union, United Working Families, and several progressive city council members that helped propel his campaign to prominence and eventually finish in that second place position in the first round of the mayoral election. He's also been endorsed by newly elected Congressman Jonathan Jackson. And he has continued to consolidate support from much of the city's left-of-the-center political brass, receiving endorsements from Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle and Congressman Danny Davis, and also Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. Senator Bernie Sanders has also backed Brandon Johnson. And, of course, the Chicago Teachers Union represents more than 25,000 educators in the city and describes its mission as being dedicated to advancing and promoting quality public education improving teaching and learning conditions, and protecting members' rights. The International Union of Elevator Constructors is a union representing more than 25,000 workers in the profession of building, modernizing, and repairing elevators. And they also have thrown their support behind Brandon Johnson. SEIU Healthcare is a union representing healthcare, child care, home care, and nursing home workers in four Midwestern states, including Illinois, Indiana, Missouri, and Kansas. And SEIU Local 1 represents more than 50,000 workers in the Midwest, with janitors, security officers, airport workers, food service workers, and more, according to its website. Its endorsements are split between the local chapter of the union and the Illinois State Council, according to a press release. So as these candidates continue to vie for endorsements, they also continue to engage in some of the scheduled debates and forums. And last night was a forum held by ABC. Next week, WGN will host a debate. And the candidates continue to strive to show a difference in their strategies in handling the very prominent issue of public safety in the city of Chicago. And here are a few of the remarks from candidates as they receive endorsements. And this, of course, reported from NBC5.
As for Brandon Johnson, he, of course, has secured the support of Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul. Also today, former mayoral candidate Jamal Green, he endorsed Paul Vallis. The first current statewide elected official, Attorney General Kwame Raoul, endorsing mayoral candidate Brandon Johnson, partly based on Johnson's public safety plans.
If we're simply looking at policing as the answer to fighting crime, policing is a part of it. But if we're simply looking at that, we are going to fall short. We are asking police officers to not only do their job, which is difficult enough, we're asking them to do someone else's job. And that's why I've built a comprehensive public safety plan calling for more EMTs.
For Paul Vallis, he received the endorsement of four aldermen, as well as former mayoral candidate Jamal Green.
I've heard a lot of the racism stuff and all of these different things that they're throwing out. It's just not true. Paul Vallis is a good man.
Green, who called Johnson a fraud during the first round of voting, had met privately with both candidates. Progressives are very critical of Green's choice.
The city is very divided. And, you know, while I'm going to get a lot of flack from the progressive movement, they need to understand that there is, that a couple of their single issues are not issues of everyone.
As both candidates see it, these endorsements are about building coalitions and also showing strength.
I'm willing to listen. I'm willing to learn. I'm willing to go to individuals who have lived the experience, who are in the communities, who have seen the violence firsthand.
Having the Attorney General along the way, it certainly put us in a better, stronger, safer position. So thank you.
So here is why endorsements matter. They matter if those leaders could get their supporters to the polls. At a time when voter fatigue is very high, candidates need any and every incentive to improve turnout.
Let's get back to the Jamal Green endorsement. Were you surprised by that?
I had been in talks. He had talked about this, and I think he had decided long ago. For some reason, he did not connect with Brandon Johnson. There might have been some kind of... They did not have a relationship, let's just face it. And he did have one with Paul Vallis, starting with 4 years ago when they ran then for mayor. All right, let's also talk about what about Mayor Lightfoot, Cam Buckner, Congressman Chuy Garcia. We haven't heard from them yet. and perhaps we're going to see some movement in that direction of, you know, maybe they all support one, or do they split as well?
Interesting. Yeah. Still more to come.
And that was from NBC5. Of course, that was Mary Ahern reporting on the endorsements. And as she noted, there are still more former mayoral candidates, including incumbent Mayor Lori Lightfoot, who have yet to voice their opinion and make a decision on who they will be supporting for mayor of the city of Chicago. As many of the candidates have noted over the period of time, public safety, crime, youth violence, and the escalation of violent crime by youth is at the heart of so many concerns. There are those who say this is not a policing issue, but a social issue. And as Brandon Johnson states, that there is a need for more emergency medical technicians, more of those who are skilled in mental health services, as well as police officers who have a sensitivity to the community. There also is a need for understanding of what the youth are responding to, who in recent years have become violent, who have engaged in riots, and who have been defiant of police authority and often have posted videos of wrongful stops, searches, and arrests that tend to exacerbate the poor relationship between citizens and police. These are issues that young people are looking for someone to speak up about. Former mayoral candidate Jamal Green had been largely seen by the millennial population, those under 40 and even under 30, as the voice of young people whose issues were not being heard and who often had been mischaracterized as the problem instead of people responding to a problem. The issues of economic opportunity and education opportunities have been at the forefront of what Jamal Green promoted during his candidacy. So the question becomes, will the candidate he endorsed also take that stand for advocacy of young people and their needs? How will young people benefit from some of the state's programs, making education, community college education, free? And has the business community sufficiently partnered with the community colleges in order to provide that pathway to employment once the education is completed? And will that change the economic circumstances in many of Chicago's hardest hit communities economically? Well, time will tell. And voters have an opportunity to begin the process. Early voting in Chicago starts March 20th. Monday morning, it begins. That's all for today. You've been listening to On Air Daily News. I'm Naima Latif. Join us on Monday for more international, national, and local news that can enhance your life. Until then, enjoy the rest of your day.